Here at ExchangeWire, we've spent the past few months building a new platform called Connect. It helps buyers and brands find the best tech solutions for their media campaigns. It's free for buyers to list their campaign requirements and for tech suppliers to set up an account so that they can get connected to buyers. Find out more at exchangewire.com/connect or by emailing info@thewirecorp.com. The Mad Tech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the Mad Tech Podcast. Our very special guest this week, joining us all the way from Singapore, is Roshant Adani, Director for Performance Growth at M&C Saatchi Performance. Roshant, welcome.
Thanks, Rachel. Excited to be here.
Great. And over in Waltham, Sir Lindsay Rowntree.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Oh, a little early in the morning for us, but this is becoming commonplace.
Not as early as last week.
That's true.
This is progress. True.
Okay, let's jump into discussions of news stories this week. The first story I wanted to discuss with both of you was coming out in the news earlier in the week, Netflix reporting their figures, including revenue and subscriber growth for Q3, and missing their projected growth numbers on subscriptions by their own estimations. Not by a huge amount, I ought to add, but by a slither. What's also really important to note about the reporting of their figures for this quarter is that some 66% of the growth that they've achieved in this quarter has come from APAC. So this is not surprising, given that we've been discussing Netflix and their subscriber growth trajectory for quite a while on the Mad Tech Podcast, watching keenly to see how it unfolds. And for at least the last year, possibly a little longer, they've been talking about how they're going to be sustaining growth, or achieving growth, I should say, rather than sustaining, from international markets. So it's not surprising that APAC's the growth engine for their continued subscriber numbers. So I want to dive into that particular point, but also just a couple of other important things to note about the numbers that they reported is that they've obviously achieved an enormous uptick in user numbers and revenue in the first two quarters of the year, fueled partly by the circumstances around the pandemic and the impact that's had on, user behavior. But that also means that even though growth has slowed in Q3, which is what they anticipated, it slowed a little more severely than they expected. Nevertheless, their overall position for this year is likely to be a huge uplift on 2019, and they're going to be reporting overall user numbers and revenue growth that's much similar to the trajectory that they enjoyed back in 2018. So this is a really interesting position, right? They are, knocking their numbers out of the park, again, as I said earlier, slightly fueled by the circumstances of the pandemic, but yet the growth engine for where this activity is coming from is APAC. Now, the other thing that I wanted to touch on with both of you is, what is that actually going to look like in a practical capacity? Because looking to APAC markets to add user numbers and subscriber numbers means many things. Firstly, which markets are you going to be going to? So the report this week tells us that actually where the main growth engines were in APAC for Netflix has been South Korea and Japan. Where does that leave us with the other parts of APAC that we know are fueling strong sort of streaming potential growth? So Southeast Asia, India, and so forth. And there was also a point in the article that they are looking to really expand their local language content, and they're actually launching a Hindi interface, so an entire interface in Hindi to attract a particular market in India. And I'm really interested to know, particularly from you, Roshant, based there in APAC, what you think the likelihood is that they're going to expand their local language content, not just within India, but in other APAC markets. So very, very long intro from Rachel. How unusual. Roshant, over to you. What's your perspective on this?
Hey, thanks, Rachel. No, I think this has been going on for a very long time, where not just Netflix, but a lot of the industry watchers have also been talking about how the growth and expansion for Netflix will come eventually from the international market. And the growth that we've seen this year, where 66% has been contributed by APAC, shows how big a market this is and how seriously Netflix is taking it, right? And I'm absolutely not surprised by those numbers. However, what we need to remember, and you raised the point, right? Like if we look at APAC, then APAC is actually divided into two types of markets. On one side, there are developed markets like Japan, South Korea, Singapore, where the user behavior is very similar to the Western markets, I would say. So if you look at the average revenue per user, it would be amongst the top of the world. They would have all the latest devices, 5G enabled, latest iPhone, etc. But at the same time, in APAC, there is a bigger market, which is more like a developing market, like India, like Indonesia, like a large part of Southeast Asia, etc., where if you see, the average revenue is going to be a big challenge, right? But that is the market where the big numbers are going to come. So if we talk about the next 100 million subscribers or 200 million subscribers, then Netflix will have to tap and explore those markets. However, the revenue, the bulk of the high revenue users would primarily come from markets like China, Japan, South Korea, Singapore. Like these are the markets to focus on from a revenue point of view.
Yeah. And, you know, given that, how do you think they're going to break into those potential or those markets, those Southeast Asian markets or other Asian markets, India and Southeast Asia, with potential high revenue growth? What's going to make them the differentiator and how they're going to compete with perhaps local players? Will it be local language content?
So I think if we language is definitely one aspect of it, but what we need to understand is these markets, Netflix will need to do a lot of innovation on all the three aspects. So the number one aspect is product. Now, this is a market which is dominated by cheap smartphones, entry-level smartphones, or Android operating system, right? Like 90% or more than 90% of a lot of these markets are dominated by Android. So they would need to do a lot of product innovation, making the product more compatible with low-end phones, also making content available with slower connectivity. Like even when a user wants to download a video, the video compression has to be really good and the file size has to be very small, etc. Local language support plays a very important part in a lot of these languages. I think Netflix has been doing some interesting stuff. So like you mentioned, Hindi is one of the languages they have made their interface on. They've also explored Malay, which is a language spoken in Malaysia. So they've been definitely doing a lot of experimentation. I think more product level innovations are required. One of the most important point, and this is where I personally feel the game can be won or lost, would be on price. So if you actually look at Netflix has already taken some good steps in terms of doing price innovation. So in markets like India and Indonesia, they've already launched a subscription product, which is priced at around $2.7. And it is only like one user access only on the mobile phone. So they've definitely done that innovation. But I feel there is still a lot of room to do. And one of the biggest reasons why is the competition. So if we look at India, Disney Plus has a big head start because of their acquisition of Hotstar. And Disney Plus Hotstar product is actually sold at $20 for the year. So that is the kind of pricing Disney is offering with the kind of content that Disney has, right? And also a lot of these competition primarily comes from platforms which operate in a freemium model. So they provide a lot of content for free. And then there are certain type of content which is behind a paywall. So I think price is something which I don't know. Like Netflix, I don't think that one fits all solution that Netflix has used around the world, whether it will work in APAC or not, that is definitely in question. And also the third part is, I would say, content. So having content in the local language, and I think I would want to correct here, not just a language, but languages, right? Like if you look at a market like India, there are 30 states which talk a different language, and the number of speakers of each and every language is very, very sizable. Even if you look at a market like Indonesia, the number one language is Bahasa, but the number two language is Javanese, which has 85 million speakers. So these all small languages will constitute of like anywhere between 50 to 100 million speakers. So it's not just like one language. There are multiple languages which can primarily give you like 20, 30 million subscribers each. So definitely there is a lot of potential, but there are different fronts on which they need to fight.
And that, listeners, is one of the key reasons why American companies struggle so much to understand Asian markets. So much complexity, right? That was fascinating rundown. Lindsay, your point of view.
Yeah, likewise. I want to say that was absolutely fascinating. And I've got nothing to add because everything I was going to say, Roshat said it, but with more stats and more information than I was able to say it with. So now defunct in this podcast. I'll see you guys later. Have a good day.
No worries. Take the morning off, Lindsay.
Yeah, I will. Thanks very much.
I suppose then let me just fire one question at you before we move on to the next story, because that was just a fantastic rundown of the position from Roshat. What about the advertising angle here? So we talk a lot about whether Netflix would ever go to an ad-funded model. And I know pretty much the consensus view is no, they absolutely won't. It's just not there. That is not their product offering. And I get that. But do you think there is a possibility that they could be cornered into a position where, like Roshat says, they're competing with people that have got infinite content and run a freemium model? Price is a key consideration. Could they be funneled into a position where it's worth their considering not just, you know, how they compete on price alone, so creating a more price competitive package, but considering free ad-funded content for particular regions and countries? Lindsay, what's your point of view?
Yeah, I mean, I always said that I believed Netflix would eventually launch an ad-funded model. And if they were to do it anywhere, it would be Asia they would do it in, because of who they're competing against. They can get away with the sub model much more in Europe and in North America. But in Asia, where the cost is such a big factor, they would need to go ad funded. But as Russia has highlighted, actually what they've done instead is price optimization. And they've done a good job at it. They've done the mobile only option for the kind of non-broadband penetration countries like Southeast Asia, where there's a high mobile penetration. And you sort of start to think, well, actually, maybe they really do not want to go down that route. And there are examples where the ad funded or the freemium model hasn't worked so well. You know, iFlix is an example of that in APAC. So actually, Netflix will be looking at those kind of companies thinking, we think we still have enough of a product to be able to work this out without needing to go down the ad funded route. And they're getting revenue in other ways. So, you know, for them, product placement is becoming a big, big thing. And if they can do that, not just for the massive kind of tentpole US shows like Stranger Things, but also start doing that in some of their local language content, like some of the Hindi content they're doing for the Indian market, you know, that could get very interesting. But what one thing I did want to point out that is, Roshat has already talked about this, but it was an actual statement Netflix made that kind of gives you an insight into what their thinking is at. And it was, they referred to their growth in APAC as in South Korea specifically, double digit penetration of broadband homes. And that tells you very, very much about what Netflix's overall strategy is globally, is they're looking for broadband users. And that's where they will always enter into challenges in Asia, because it's only the likes of South Korea, Japan and China, and obviously like Australia and New Zealand, that have high broadband penetration, like Japan and South Korea.
And Singapore, of course,
it's almost 100%.
Yeah.
But other markets, it's mobile focused. So they obviously are doing price optimization with their mobile only package. But a stat I saw, and Russia, you might have a different stat, but in India, the broadband penetration of India is 6%. Now that's still something like 8 million homes, 8 million people, but it's in terms of the Indian population, it's absolutely tiny. So they really need to nail the mobile aspect of that. And that, as Roshat said, is 100% the product. And that's making sure that the streaming quality versus how much people are paying for data, all those kinds of things, Netflix need to nail. They can't bring their North American product over to Asia and expect it to work perfectly in every country. There are so many other things to think about. You know, even in Europe, we have this problem. Like, you go to another European country and the Netflix package there is pretty rubbish because they don't have deals with a lot of local content and they don't have a lot of local content themselves. It's starting to improve, but everything is still very, very English focused. And there's a lot of work that they need to do to try to redress that.
Yeah. And it's a reminder that it's not just a case of setting up a suitable platform. There's so much more that goes along with it, including content and your content strategy. Roshat, a view on whether they would consider something ad funded?
Like again, like personally, I'm I personally believe in the Netflix model, where it's like paid content is something which always will be sustainable. Like Lindsay rightly said, like iFlix, actually Hook was a great example where they tried to create like a freemium kind of a model and it did not work and it passed away. iFlix also, like this year, I think finally like Tencent bought iFlix and they're trying to rejuvenate that. So definitely like freemium model have their own challenges and have their own questions. But I think in general, what Netflix needs to understand is the price, like who eventually is going to pay the price. Will it come from the consumer or can it come from, say, advertisers, etc.? That's the balance that they need to identify. And I think particularly in APAC, right? Like I would like to highlight, like Disney Plus has not been a competition to Netflix in the Western market in the previous years. And Netflix had that head start. But in a market like APAC, Disney, because of the acquisition with Disney Plus Hotstar, is going to be a very big competition and they already have a head start. Like Netflix has, like if we just look at the amount of content which is there on that platform compared to a content on Netflix, and I'm talking about local content, there is a huge gap. Now they need to really fill that gap up. And if they, for that, they will need to produce a lot of content and they need to understand, okay, where will the money come from?
Yeah, amazing. We could carry on talking about this. Actually, I think, Rochette, you are now, from now on, going to become, whenever we have a topic around streaming wars, you're going to become our specialist APAC advisor on this subject.
Over to our APAC correspondent.
Definitely, 100%.
Actually, I've worked in this industry. That's why I'm quite passionate about it as well.
Excellent. We're definitely coming back to you for more comment in future. Okay, so second story I wanted to chat with you guys about is Forrester releasing a quite an interesting snapshot of 2021 predictions for the APAC market. And this is concerning marketing and advertising in a general context and specifically some predictions around technology and technology platforms. So some of the things that they talked about in their 12 key predictions for the region were that the role of the CMO is, in their opinion, in 2021, finally going to become very closely aligned with integrating marketing and customer experience. So that CMOs are going to be moving more from a sort of a broad marketing capacity to something that's much more specifically focusing on customer loyalty and retention and whatever capabilities are needed to support that. So that's going to have a knock-on impact to where marketers are spending money on technology tools and capabilities. And although some of that will go on customer experience platforms, Forrester are expecting some consolidation in that particular market and that's going to drive very fierce competition between some of the big marketing tech platforms that marketers generally rely on in a day-to-day capacity. What was really interesting about this, and I thought would be great to draw on in a discussion with the two of you, is that from a tech perspective, Forrester is saying that they think that this is going to create a lot of movement amongst the dominant platforms within particular regions. So in India, they talked about that fierce competition heating up between platforms the likes of Amazon, Jio, Flipkart and Paytm. In China, the battle's going to be waged between the likes of Alibaba, JD.com and Pinduoduo. Lindsay, help me out.
Is it Pinduoduo?
Thank you. Pinduoduo. Yep, there we go. Yep, Rochette's laughing at me.
Pinduoduo. Also, to correct you, it's Paytm, not Paytm.
Thank you. Paytm. Excellent. Let's get as many corrections in as we possibly can. Right, moving on to Southeast Asia, where I think I might be able to get these ones right. Competition between Grab and Gojek, which we've talked a lot about in the podcast, and also Shopee, e-commerce platform. So what's interesting about this is it's really starting to drive that conversation between e-commerce and the rest of sort of digital marketing functionalities. And it's also starting to elevate that conversation from a platform perspective from what the likes of some platforms that we've referred to in the past as super utility apps, the likes of Grab and Gojek that started out as ride-hailing platforms and have now grown and turned into platforms that provide a whole range of utilities. And these predictions start to talk about how those platforms might grow and gather a bit of market share across a number of verticals. So very interested in your perspective on this. Rocha, you first as APAC correspondent, because I'm sure you've got a lot to say about this from a tech perspective.
So I think I did read that Forrester Trends report, and I think honestly, like, this is a constant trend that we are seeing, right? Like, at the start of the year, there was a similar report which came from Adobe, which spoke about the digital trends, and there also they highlighted some important stats, right? Like, they spoke about 2 out of 5 companies in APAC are talking about how consumer experience is going to be the key deciding factor. Then there was a stat which spoke about 57% of the companies said that they are going to double their investment in technology, whether it is like in the form of AI, etc., to improve their customer experience. So yeah, definitely, I think this is a trend that we are seeing in this market. I think generally companies in APAC have been kind of followers when we talk about like providing a great customer experience. If we just talk about like e-commerce, like everybody tries to follow the Amazon model where the customer is at the center of it, right? But there have been a lot of improvements. So like if we speak about a lot of these players, so someone like a Lazada, they basically have this concept called Lazmall, where all the, like if you buy from Lazmall, then you have, there won't be any fake products. They take care of the authenticity of the products. Then there is guaranteed delivery within 24 hours, etc. So they are trying to improve their whole customer experience. Then you spoke about like if whether it is like Grab and Gojek, you can do so much on the single app, etc. I'm actually a big fan of this whole concept of super app. And they basically enrich your customer's life, right? Like they really enrich the whole experience that the consumer has with the platform. So yeah, I think that is something, this is something which we are seeing across in the APAC. So it's not something which is concentrated in like one market. So whether we talk about like in China, there is like Alibaba, there is like Tencent with WeChat, who's trying to do that. In India, there is definitely like Paytm is trying to do that. Ola is trying to do that. In Southeast Asia, there is Grab and Gojek. So everywhere you're seeing this trend. And I personally feel that the West will also soon adapt to that. So this is going to be APAC's biggest contribution to the digital ecosystem.
Yeah, that's really interesting because we've been talking about that for the last couple of years. And at the last 2 years, Singapore's, I mean, very sadly, we couldn't host it this year, but last year and the year before, we really started to, you know, have quite detailed conversations about where those utility, how those utility apps are building and growing and where that learning will eventually filter down to other markets and what might that look like. Lindsay, what's your point of view, particularly the idea that, you know, are we going to see more of these kind of one-stop shop services, one-stop app type designs in the Western market, and kind of why haven't we seen more of it today? You know, a couple of years ago we were talking about Viber building out their capabilities in Europe, but it's still not very widespread. Maybe it's widely used in Eastern Europe, but not in the rest of Europe. What's your point of view?
It's a good question. I don't really know the answer. I think that Asia, APAC is so good at these one-stop shop solutions. And you know, as Roshat said, like he's putting his money on them definitely being the future of contribution to the entire world. And I totally get why he would say that. And it's strange that we're not necessarily seeing the same level of movement, the same level of innovation over in this part of the world or in North America either. I mean, there certainly are examples of where it's happening. You know, Facebook are doing their best to try to integrate payment and everything else and e-commerce into the likes of Instagram and also into WhatsApp as well. But it just feels like, I think that we have a lot of legacy for a start in many of these markets, a lot of different legacies going on, which prevent, particularly from a payment perspective, which would prevent us from being able to fully embrace those kinds of solutions. And you know, one of the biggest problems we have is our credit card and banking legacy, which makes it difficult for us to be able to transact in the same way as they can in a lot of the Asian markets. But I think also there is a lot of, you wouldn't think so from the way that Google dominates the market, the way Facebook dominates the market, there's also a lot of people don't like to necessarily go to one place for everything. There's still a lot of people wanting to try different places of different things. So being able to pay for your gas bill in the same place that you can buy your shopping from feels like a very strange concept to a to somebody in this part of the world, but it's completely commonplace out in APAC. And I think that there's a lot of consumer misunderstanding about what that could do for us, as for us, and maybe misbelief that there is too much control by these big companies. Again, it sounds ridiculous given the control some of these companies have over in this part of the world, but I'm struggling to try and work out why there isn't more of this going on. And they're the kind of reasons, like there's a greater understanding of value exchange in APAC that doesn't necessarily exist over here. And I wonder if that is in part a barrier to why these kinds of companies aren't able to take off in the same way.
Definitely, I would say there's mistrust of any one company having too much of a stake in your day-to-day life. Yeah. And that's definitely, you know, mistrust around data handling. And it's quite also, I would argue, quite a European thing as well. I'm not saying that the same doesn't exist in North America, but there's a number we know of European markets that are deeply suspicious of the way that companies hold and control personal data. And maybe that doesn't exist in APAC. I don't know. What do you think, Rochette?
I would say that, like, yeah, like even this is something which I've not been able to figure it out as well. Like how hasn't this trend been copied into the Western market? The closest that I can think of is like end of the day, like you take an Uber and then you also use Uber Eats to call your food. There is some like synergy happening there. But if we talk about Amazon, you're ordering your groceries. You're also ordering your fashion shopping is happening on Amazon. You're watching content on Amazon Prime Amazon Video. You're listening to music on Amazon Music. You're reading your book on Kindle, which is again like an Amazon product. So there are things which are happening, but that larger consolidation, it surprises me as well. Like why it hasn't happened and when it will happen.
It's a bit of a mystery, and maybe some of the answers are relating more to infrastructure challenges, like you mentioned, Lindsay. And that could also be that those that are involved in those legacy issues have got so much of an interest in holding on to them, right? So,
yeah.
You know, banking regulations and banking, and financial regulations are, are deeply steeped in history in a lot of European countries and also in North America. And maybe there's too many vested interests going on there for any one person to sort of let go. And maybe that's what's been really interesting, certainly about the rise of the likes of Gojek and Grab, which were born and brought up in Southeast Asian countries, is that those markets have been ripe for this kind of really sparkly, brand new innovation that people have just adopted, at lightning speed in comparison to what we see over in the West. Really fascinating. Anyway, I'm moving us on because I spent too much time talking about the last story. So third story of the day, the day that we've all been anticipating, the week that we've been anticipating. Finally, the US Department of Justice has filed a landmark lawsuit against Google. Now, we've been talking about the prospect of this for ages. They have been running their investigation into this particular part of Google's practices that has caused them to bring the lawsuit forward for at least the last 12 months. Specifically, the complaint is going to be focusing on Google's misuse of their market position to sustain a monopoly over search and search advertising. And the argument is going to be stating that Google got themselves into a monopolistic position by creating the Chrome browser as default on all Android devices, and that very keenly shaped the marketplace and meant that they were able to undertake anti-competitive practices to nudge everybody else out of the way. Google's counter-argument is that these assertions are flawed, and that actually upholding the lawsuit will give sort of an unfair boost to less sophisticated competitors, and that will result in worse user experience. Sounds like quite a weak defense if you ask me. But anyway, I need some perspectives on this from you guys. It's obviously a big deal. We know that there's many other investigations going on into anti-competition with regards to Google, both in the US and also in international markets. Important to say that this particular lawsuit has been taking account of evidence in international markets as well. So they're not just focusing on what's happening in the US, although I imagine their jurisdiction will only cover the US, but they'll certainly be resting on some evidence that they'll be gleaning from the way that Google has behaved in international markets. And this has a big impact on the advertising industry. We've talked a lot about what would happen if Google faced a big lawsuit that meant that they had to change the way that they do business and perhaps separate their search business from their advertising business. So initial thoughts. Lindsay, I'm going to come to you first.
Yeah, I mean, where to start on this one? I think first of all, while it's something we've been waiting for a long time, it does also feel a bit like, oh, where has this come from? It's like literally out of nowhere.
With this, why now?
Yeah, exactly. And you have to wonder what role the election in the US is playing in this. Not that I think that it's a political gambit at all. I don't believe that, but I do wonder if there's the reason they had to rush this forward before a potential change in government leadership meant that could mean a big personnel change in the DOJ, which then could mean that all the hard work that team has done could then be scrapped, had to be started again. So they were like, we must get this out quickly so that we can then say, okay, we've played our hand. Here's the work we've done before any major changes could potentially happen. So I do wonder if that's why this is the time that it's come out. But I think in general, that kind of Google's whole stance, like the Google public policy tweet, absolute rubbish, saying that, you know, people use us because they choose to, not because they're forced to, and they can easily find alternatives. I mean, it's one of those things where I feel torn as a consumer of Google, a big consumer of Google, and someone that also knows how sausages are made. Like I know what goes into Google, I know what it's about, but at the same time, I do think that Google products are really good. Like, and I use many of them, and Google search is great, but they've allowed themselves to get into that position. They have abused their position, and that's allowed them to get ahead. And then referring to, you know, less sophisticated competitors. The only reason they're less sophisticated is because Google
is because again, Google's being dominant
in this position, not allowed them to have a chance. And actually, in terms of search functionality, surely at this point, 20 years ago, Google was the most sophisticated. It was the reason they were able to do what they did was because they had a new way of being able to run search and allow people to search things in search engines. But surely by now it's fairly commoditized. Most of what Google does is buy things rather than build things. It's not like there's any innovation coming out of Google itself. They're buying it from other companies. So why shouldn't there be an opportunity for other companies to be able to do just that? We talked a few months ago with Carl Peterson from Nent about DuckDuckGo, and you know there could be opportunities for the likes of DuckDuckGo as a nascent search engine that's focused on user privacy to really come to the fore here. And I'd still believe Apple should buy them. You know, Google, for example, talking of abusive position, there's obviously a lot of chat in the article I read about Android, but Google also pays something like $7 billion a year to be the default search engine on Safari on iPhones as well. So Google abuses a position in every single possible place, even with its direct competitors. Now is the time for could this be the resurgence of Bing? Like, Google's market share is like 94% globally. And I wonder if the other 6% is only because China has Baidu and Russia has Yandex, probably. Like, there's so much opportunity here for other companies that could finally be realized. And Google needs pulling down a peg or two, or a peg or two.
Russia, what's your point of view?
To be honest, it's very early to really pass any point of view, right? Because this just came like less than, 30 hours ago. And we still don't know exactly how this will go about, what could really be the implications, etc. But I think a couple of things which I would want to raise here, right? I think first thing we should remember that this is going to go for a very long time. It's not something which will close in the next 1 year, etc.
Yes.
Like if we remember the Microsoft antitrust law, it went on for almost a decade, right? It started in 1998, and by the time things got over, it was like 2007, 2008. So almost for one decade. And also second thing is like Microsoft was never broken, right? Like although in the end, there was a settlement which happened, and then Microsoft like stayed as it was. So even like right now, we are talking about like there is a possibility of Google breaking, and there is a possibility that that might not also happen. That is the reality of a lot of these antitrust lawsuits, right? However, I think two things which I feel will surely come out of this. The very first thing is this will amplify the noise that is being created around regulation for the tech sector. That is definitely a possibility. this lawsuit is going to push that. And we've already seen a lot of active opposition in the US Senate, etc., against all the tech companies. It's not just Google. I would say Google, Facebook, Amazon, etc. So this would definitely push for regulation for technology. That is a reality which would happen very soon. And I think second thing, which is, and again, this is something if we look back at the Microsoft case, right? I think Microsoft, after that lawsuit, they became very cautious in terms of the way they were expanding. Like Bill Gates has publicly accepted that a lot of the ambitions of Microsoft to get into consumer products like smartphones, audio players, etc., MP3 players, etc., were actually had to go and take a backseat. So this is definitely like the same can be expected out of Google. Do we expect Google to do deals like how they bought like YouTube and DoubleClick in the future? I doubt. With so much like spotlight on them, I really see them becoming very cautious in terms of the approach. So I'm pretty sure these two things would happen. How this will affect their business is something which we'll have to wait and observe.
Yeah, and that's, so they're all really good points, right? Firstly, it's going to go on for a long time. There's probably not going to be any quick solutions here. Secondly, we could pontificate about the impact that we'll have on search and search advertising. But like you say, Lindsay, it's just to, you know, there are some potential competitors out there, and there's plenty of reasons why there should be other search engines and why people might prefer to use other search engines. But we've no idea where that's going to go at this stage.
Yeah. And consumers are lazy as well, right? So consumers will do exactly what is easy for them, and Google have made it so easy.
Yeah. But that's the biggest argument behind really how they've used their market position to dominate, which is if you make a browser a default option on an operating device, then in an operating system on a handheld device, then everybody's going to use it. That's all there is to it. And the fact that they do that everybody does use it, and Google's got infinite amounts of revenue, they can just keep refining and refining and refining that product such that even if you think about using an alternative, you never get the same experience. And so you wind up just going back to Chrome every time. And I also agree with your point of view, Lindsay, as well, that, you know, as a consumer, I'm a bit torn too, in that I use a lot of Google products and they work really well. So that's great. But I still have got that sense of suspicion that actually, firstly, I don't want all of the things that I do in my life to be funneled through this sort of Google persona of me, because I am suspicious about data privacy and how they use that and apply that data. And then I also want to have choice, and I don't feel that I have choice at the moment. So I think the argument that consumers have got choice is weak as well. But yeah, I mean, like you say, Rashad, what impact is this going to have on other tech companies and tech organizations and the debate that rages around market dominance? And I think this is happening at a really interesting time in our lives, because the pandemic has helped a lot of people to see and understand who's got a financial advantage in the world, you know, who has actually got the ability to see out something that could, that could completely kill one business and doesn't even affect another business. And the answer is it's very often those companies that are enormously dominant in their field already. Firstly, they've got cash reserves and cash flow that they can just sustain for a long time. And secondly, they're really dominant in a digital marketplace where actually there should be a lot more diversity. And why isn't there that diversity? So I wonder if this is all going to collude to sort of give us a particular point of view on this at a particular moment in time. And will it lead anywhere interesting? Will it give fuel? Will it fan the sort of fires of anti-competition arguments in other industries, in other markets? That's what I'd be really interested
to see. Yeah, and I think Rashad's point about Microsoft is an interesting one, because it's under the same Sherman Act that this has come about from the DOJ as well, the anti-competitiveness of Google. And it's interesting because it's a very good point. It took years and nothing really happened. Microsoft were fined heavily. They had a settlement, but nothing really happened to the company. And you have to wonder if 12, 13 years on, what kind of difference that makes to how the world looks now and how Google dominates versus how Microsoft dominated back then. If the levies that are taken, that the actions that are taken will be that different from what happened to Microsoft all those years ago. You would hope so, but you just don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's what, when this whole Microsoft thing started, it was purely about Internet Explorer versus Netscape Navigator.
Yeah.
And by the time this case got over, both of them were almost redundant because Chrome had come and taken over, mobile had come and taken over. So I don't know, like Lindsay said, like 10 years from now, 12 years from now, we don't know whether we will need search engines or not. Or maybe there would be super apps where we will go and everything would be there.
It's true. Right? So,
yeah. It's totally true. Someone else could be ruling our digital lives in another 10 years' time. Okay, I'm going to move us on to the second part of the podcast. Rashad, tell us a little bit about what's going on at MNC Saatchi Performance in APAC, and maybe specifically a little bit about what you're focusing on as Director for Growth. What does that mean?
Sure, thanks. I think MNC Saatchi Performance, we are a specialized agency, and we operate like in a very niche space. And that niche space is primarily all the digital native, that is the space we operate on. So almost all the clients we work with are digital natives. So these are businesses which have been created in the digital economy. We work with all the leading e-commerce, ride-hailing, super apps, entertainment, OTT, etc. So any space which is like digitally enhanced, that is the category that we operate on. And in general, my role within MNC Saatchi has been in terms of focusing on growth markets. So our agency, agency has definitely identified APAC to be like the growth market. But again, within the APAC also, if you see, there are a lot of different markets and there are a lot of different possibilities and potential which are there. So when I joined Saatchi almost three and a half years back, I was initially focusing on India market. And now, after working on the India market for a couple of years, I've started focusing more on Indonesia market. In future, we never know, there is Vietnam, Philippines, etc. So all these markets are at a different kind of trajectory in their growth. And my job is primarily to identify when is the right time to enter those markets and join the growth bandwagon.
And what about the impact of COVID on the sort of digitization of some of those markets? Has there been a boost? Have you seen acceleration in particular Asian markets?
I think there's definitely been a huge boost, right? COVID, as Sir Martin Sorrell famously said, that COVID has been the best chief digital officer that the world has got till now, right? And that's
that
true.
That sounds like something he would say, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's definitely what we've seen, right? There has definitely been a lot of digitization and the whole efforts have been increased by leaps and bounds, I would say. But also the flip side, which not many people understand, is there are also a lot of challenges which were raised for a lot of these companies, right? During COVID, when a lot of these markets were actually under lockdown. And a lot of the countries were actually in a much severe lockdown as compared to the Western part of the world. And a lot of these companies, whether it is e-commerce or whether it is food delivery, etc., they did not have the infrastructure to deliver their products and services. So obviously there is digitization and the efforts are going at a different kind of pace, but there are challenges on the infrastructure level, which got shown during the COVID time, I think.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And so do you think that sort of heading into 2021, where possible, there's going to be much more of a focus on sort of solidifying that infrastructure and trying to accelerate the pace of sophistication of infrastructure? I mean, I'm not expecting you to be an expert on infrastructure across APAC countries, but I just, from an opinion point of view, is that something where you see that there might be more investment in 2021?
I think definitely that there would be more investment, but what we need to understand is that the investment has to come from all the levels, right? It's not just the companies who are investing in terms of building an infrastructure. I think the governments also have to work more closely to ensure the supply chains are not affected. In general, Southeast Asia is a very close-knit market where a lot of the supply chains are spread all across. So if suppose what happened during COVID, where one market got blocked, then the whole supply chain got affected. So there is an effort which needs to be done from the government side. There is an effort that needs to come from the corporate side. There is an effort which needs to come from the consumer side as well. So definitely there is a lot of focus and everybody has to play their role.
Amazing. There's plenty more that I could ask you about life in APAC, but we've run out of time. So thank you very much, Roshan, for joining us on the podcast today and for giving us your expert APAC point of view.
Thanks, Rachel. Thanks, Lindsay. It was lovely being on the podcast.
And thank you very much, Lindsay.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you, Roshat.
And that was this week's Mad Tech Podcast.